This is HPR episode 2378 entitled, Why Doc Book? It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 40 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu talks about why Doc Book is the greatest.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everyone, this is Hacker Folk Radio. My name is Klaatu, and I'm going to talk about Doc Book again. So, in my previous DocBook episode, I discussed how to use DocBook. I gave you the nitty and the gritty. I gave it to you in excruciating detail, I think. It took me about an hour, when all I really should have said was download DocBook, start writing DocBook, put it in Pandoc, and you're done. And that's that episode pretty much summarized. But gosh, there's so much more about DocBook to talk about, because there's kind of the why of DocBook. I mean, that was the how of DocBook, but there's this why question that keeps burning at people, because, I mean, even today I see projects migrating away from DocBook for something simpler, something that they perceive to be simpler, such as Markdown or ASCII Doc or restructured text. And I'm not the kind of person, at least in this case, to say that those are bad alternatives, because I've actually used those alternatives quite frequently myself. I use them to this day, to be honest. There are many times where I'm making notes or writing down a recipe or something. I'm not going to do that in DocBook. I'm not going to write a whole article on how to make cinnamon sticky buns, you know? I mean, I just want something quick and easy, so I write that in Markdown, and it also helps that my next cloud installation can parse that Markdown into something pretty, and so it kind of all integrates with the Notes app of Nextcloud, which is a great one. You should check it out. So Markdown is a valid thing. It's not the most valid thing, but it's a valid thing. Restructured text, great. ASCII Doc, actually I've never used it, but let's ignore that fact for now since I'm going to be commenting on it in this episode. So DocBook is great. It just might not always be the thing that you want to use. And I think that's understandable, and I think that's totally valid, and I think it's something important to remember. So this is not an episode on why DocBook is the best, and it's the only thing you should use. It's simply, why is DocBook still relevant? So let me tell you how I found DocBook. DocBook I found when I first had started using Linux. One of the first purchases that I made was a Slackware DVD and the Slack book. I think it was just called Slackware Essentials or something like that. And that book has gone with me so far. I mean, that thing has been in my gym bag that held all my books for years and years and years. It's gone with me to jobs, many different places. It's been all over the place. Now, it's no longer something that I own because I had to move and it wouldn't fit in my suitcase. No physical books fit in my suitcase. There were no physical books traveling with me. But in investigating how the Slack book was written, I saw that it was written in something called SGML and processed with something I think it was called Jade. And researching that further led me to the later incarnation, I guess, of those tools or something, called DocBook. And DocBook was just this set of rules, really, written by a guy named Norman Walsh, and people seemed to use it for technical documentation. So I thought, you know what? It's a good thing to learn. So I started learning it, and I started using it, and I actually really, really liked it. And I liked it, I think, to be fair. I liked it because it was the only thing that I knew of at the time. And to be fair, again, it might have actually been the only thing at the time. I remember distinctly hearing about this new concept when I started going to technical conferences, this Markdown idea, and no one seemed to know what this Markdown idea was, so I kind of got the impression that it was just coming out, and I could look that up. I guess I could look when Markdown hit the world scene, but I really think that I might have been there for sort of the birth of Markdown, and by there I just mean sort of in the tech scene. So I learned about DocBook, I loved it. I didn't really know of any other alternative other than word processors, and I knew that I hated word processors. So now let me give you a little bit of history about myself with word processors. So word processors I didn't actually use early on. I just used this handoff computer that my dad didn't want to use anymore because it was too old and too clunky, and the word processor on it, such as it was kind of like this command liney thing that you would, and you tagged things, and you know, and then when you printed it out, those tags would turn into formatting options. So my very, very first experience with the idea of, oh my gosh, I can type stuff into a computer and then print it out and I don't have to do it with handwriting, was this program that, I mean, I don't know what it was, I don't remember, but it was running, you know, kind of in a, you know, it was like a black screen with like just, you know, plain, you know, text, like console text. It wasn't like a font or anything, you know, and that was how you did it. So I was very used to this idea of being explicit in how I want my presentation to end up. And then when word processors kind of got introduced to me, I thought, okay, well, this is kind of cool. There are a lot of menus here. I don't really like that, but okay, this is kind of interesting. And I kind of fell into it, and I started using it because you think, you know, in your foolish youth, you think, well, I should learn this stuff because all my teachers tell me that this is the big thing in the business world, and I guess that's what I'm going to do. And so you're like learning all this stuff, and you know, within 2 days, you know more than the teacher, that sort of thing. We've all been there. And give it about 5 or 7 years, and I go to open up a file that I'd done, and suddenly the thing won't work anymore. Things deprecated. The whole file format doesn't work. There's no application on the face of the planet that will open that file format. Why? The file format was closed, and the application that gave birth to that format has closed its doors, and it no longer works. Or it's updated and decided, oh, that old format, who cares about that? Nobody used that anyway. We'll just do this new one. That happened to me about 5 different times, I swear to you. And I've heard other hosts on HPR and in other podcasts say similar things. And in the Fedora project, I know a couple of people who've overheard idly say, like, oh yeah, I remember back in the day when I was using this and that got deprecated. And that's like, I feel like that there's a not insignificant number of people who have been pushed towards open source from that very experience. Just the idea that just something as simple as a word processor document has given us so much trouble that we won't touch word processors anymore. And I'm boldly and proudly one of those people. I will not touch a word processor except in very rare. I might not actually touch I can't remember the last time that I've authentically used a word processor. I just don't do it. So DocBook was very exciting to me because it was plain text, so I knew it would open. Because, I mean, you go online and you look at BBS postings from 1983, and they still open. They still work. There's nothing deprecated about it. And the ASCII art that they include is still there. It's still exactly as it was before, you know? That's powerful stuff. So I knew plain text was good for longevity. And this DocBook stuff just seemed so exciting because I thought I could do this DocBook and then put it through a processor, and it will translate all the tags for me. And then I can have output in any format that I want, including plain text without all the tags. But it'll still maintain that structure. So that was really exciting, and I absolutely loved it. And then later when I found out about Markdown, I thought, wow, that's a really powerful idea now. Because Markdown doesn't have all those tags. It's just a way for us to all sort of agree, hey, we're going to write plain text, but we're all going to agree, we're going to do a gentleman's agreement here, that we'll all do it in the same way. We'll do it in a predictable and repeatable way. So instead of just doing a chapter heading, we'll put a hash in front of the chapter. And if it's a section within a chapter, we'll do 2 hashes. And then another section within that section, we'll do 3. It's very, as I said in the last episode, maybe not intuitive, but once you see the structure, you see the logic in it. And the same may be true for DocBook, but DocBook's a lot more verbose than just, hey, put a hash in front of your header, and that's, now you've got a chapter heading. And we'll even parse that as a chapter heading, and we'll put it in your table of contents for you if you want us to. That's powerful stuff, and that's very appealing, and it's very attractive and very exciting. And hey, I'll admit it, I've flirted with Markdown. I've tried it, you know. I spend a little bit of time with Markdown, just like everybody else. No, but seriously, I do use it still. I think the problem is that the way that Markdown is kind of talked about in a lot of communities is like it is the end of all other formats, you know? It's like this great thing, and it's simple, and it doesn't need to be that complex because it's Markdown, or it's restructured text, or it's ASCII doc, and we do it right because we're simple and we're minimalist, and you can learn this in an afternoon. And yeah, that's true, sure. I mean, I will admit, you have one page printout of a Markdown cheat sheet, and you're probably good to go. You'll probably be writing a document within the hour, definitely, because it is just there's no declarations, there's no namespacing, there's no tags. It's like, hey, if you want to do a chapter heading, you do this. If you want to do a section heading, you do that. That's all very easy. But then you do have to stop now, mind you, when you're doing your URLs, right? Because you might think, well, this will be easy. I just do a URL. Oh, wait. How do I do an embed, like an actual, how do I make a word a hyperlink? Like, I know that it'll automatically link http://, but how, I don't want the reader to see the http://. I want them to just see foo. And when they click on foo, it'll take them to example.com. And so you have to look that up, and square bracket foo, square bracket parentheses, http://example.com, close parentheses, and now that works. And again, looking at it after the fact, you're like, yeah, I see what they did there. Square brackets was the term, parentheses was the sort of the expansion of that term, which parentheses kind of are used for in real life anyway, so it totally makes sense. And it reads well. It reads as if, though, it was plain text. That's, you probably wouldn't write it exactly that way in real life. You would probably put, like, foo, space, parentheses, example.com, close parentheses, and that would be, like, the totally natural way to do it. So Markdown is doing a little bit of scoping there with the square brackets, but it's still, it's all within the same realm. It's within that margin of, like, yeah, I could get used to that. And you do get used to it. You get used to it very quickly. And that's the power of Markdown. The problem with Markdown, though, I would argue, first of all, is that you show me a person who has used Markdown and has not fallen back on HTML. It can't be done. You won't be able to find anybody under the sun who's done that. I mean, not anyone, sure. I mean, someone has written a readme.md file for GitHub or GitLab and they have not had to use an HTML tag. But I'm saying someone who's really working in Markdown, it's a classic, classic trope that they're going to fall back on HTML eventually. And once you start falling back on HTML, then you almost, you know, it's an illusion-shattering moment because everything was going so well, and then suddenly you're typing out tags again. And then you're just like, wait, well, so why am I using Markdown again? And that's what happens. I've seen it happen several times because at my previous job, we had to juggle several formats, and one of them was Markdown. And it would every single time, someone would be writing something about this plugin that they'd written for, you know, the 3D stuff, and they would be trying to do something, and the processors for Markdown just, they're not smart enough. Or the processors are processors, right? The Markdown spec itself just doesn't have an allowance for certain things. I can give you an example, and this may be like a painfully common example. Maybe you've seen people complain about this online already, and there's probably an answer out there. Someone's probably already sort of come up with a solution or whatever. Well, there's a solution, but I mean, someone's probably explained this one away. But I'm going to cite it anyway, just because it is a pretty common thing, and I feel like it's representative of some of the quirks. So let's say that you're writing a Markdown file. So you've got your hash, and then this is Markdown. Okay, so there's your chapter heading. Cool, that's easy. And then you've got your paragraph, so that's just complete, you know, all the way to the left. And you just, let's see what this Markdown does. And then you start a numbered list, rather. So you want a list that says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, with 6 items. But on the third item, you want to have a code block. That's a pretty common thing, especially in the technical world, right? I mean, if you're describing how to use a software, for instance, on Linux especially, you might want to have a code block in your bulleted list. In fact, it might be something so common that that's the main thing that you want to do with Markdown, because maybe you're writing about a command line application. So, yeah, it could be super common. So we'll do a 1 dot, and then this is item 1. And then 1 dot, this is item 2. And 1 dot, this is item 3. Markdown, it doesn't matter the numbers that you use, as long as it's an integer and a dot, and it'll order it correctly. So this is line 3 of the list. And it's going to have a code sample. So now, as we all know, the code insertion method for Markdown is 4 spaces from the left margin. So 1, 2, 3, 4. So now you're 4 spaces in, and you do, I don't know, $ hello world, and then you go to the next line, all the way back to the left margin, 1 dot, this is the 4th item, 1 dot, 5th item, 1 dot, 6th item. Okay? You render that, and the hello world item will not be a code block. It'll just be part of the previous line. So it doesn't even see, really, that it was supposed to be a block within that list. So then maybe you say, okay, well, that didn't work. So you buffer it with some blank lines. So we go back in, and we put a return after the third item, and a return after the code block. And so now we got 1, 1, 1 blank line, and then our code block, 4 spaces in, and then space, then a blank line, and then 1, 1, 1. So render that, and it does that, but now the code block is not a code block. It's just a paragraph in the middle of the, or it might be a code block, actually, but now the list does not continue sequentially. So it's 1, 2, 3, code block, 1, 2, 3. That's not what you wanted. You wanted 1, 2, 3, code block, 4, 5, 6. Okay, so you open it back up, you fiddle around with it, you complain, you look it up online, on forums, and finally you realize that the answer to all of your problems is to do the blank line after the third item, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 spaces, and then the XML HTML code, rather, code tag, HTML tag code, and then $ hello world, and then close the code tag, and then continue with your blank line, and then continue with your list. So now I'm going to pipe that through, well, not literally pipe, I'm going to send that through pandoc, and end up with a test dot, let's just do PDF for rendering. Nope, can't do that. Let's do HTML instead. There we go. And then let's look at that in something. Let's use Conqueror. And you've got 1, 2, 3, and then the code block, and then 4, 5, 6. So it completely worked. It totally worked. And it only worked because you used probably some magical number of spaces. I'm not even sure if that actually matters. That was just... that's where I ended up, let's put it that way. And then you used HTML. And that happens all the time. I've never seen a person seriously using Markdown who has not had to fall back on HTML tags. And you think, well, that's not that big of a deal because everybody knows HTML, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that's actually exactly the point of Markdown, is that it's supposed to be plain text that then gets parsed into something into many other formats. So if we're falling back on HTML for every time it's important, then why are we using Markdown, honestly? Restructured text does a lot to answer those problems, and I don't know if Markdown is something that just isn't maintained anymore, or if it's just had so many forks at this point that the original maintainer just doesn't care. I don't know. I don't know why Markdown is kind of lacking in the ways that it is. Or maybe it's feature complete in the eyes of the maintainer, and he just doesn't feel the need to make it more complex with different use cases. But Restructured text, which is used by Python, the Python community does a lot of their documentation restructured text with Python Sphinx, and that works really well. But it's like looking at it, if I had to put it on a scale between or a spectrum between DocBook and Markdown, then it would be maybe sort of, well, somewhere in the middle. And it kind of, you know, you look at it and it's like, yep, that looks like plain text. I mean, the chapter headings are underlined with dashes, so that delimits those, and paragraphs look normal, and the code blocks are prefaced with this weird sort of dot, dot, code, colon sort of thing, and then it's indented in a funky way. I see what they're going for there, and they're kind of labeling it, so I understand what that means. But there are a lot of like weird little markup things that you have to do in restructured text to have valid restructured text RST. So it's better, I would say, but it's not. I wouldn't say it was perfect because there are quirks to it as well, I have found. And a lot of times, once again, you kind of end up falling back on HTML because that's just kind of in the end what works best. And so if you're using HTML, I keep asking myself, well, why are we using the markdown type formats then? Why don't we just use HTML and get it over with? So ASCII.doc I've never used, so I actually can't complain about ASCII.doc. Although if I used it for a day, I'm sure I could find something. Although maybe not. Maybe it's great. You know, I mean, it has been highly regarded by many people. I actually know some people who write in ASCII.doc and then I think translate it over to DocBook. And that's totally valid. I've actually done that before myself. Not ASCII.doc. I've done it with, I think, plain text, actually. I used to write in plain text and then process it into DocBook and then go through and correct all the DocBook tags. Point being is that I don't believe that these quote-unquote simplified methods are actually all that simplified, and especially that becomes especially true if you start actually caring about the style, which, again, is true of DocBook as well. But I just find people saying, oh, Markdown and restructured text and ASCII.doc, they're so simple, you'll never look back. And it's kind of like, well, I've been down that road and I have looked back because I've been to some place where I'm super, super happy with the workflow, with the tool chain, until I decide, well, I would really rather that the color of that heading to be red instead of black. And then it's just, you think, well, that's super simple. I can just do this. Nope, that doesn't work. Well, okay, I can do this. Nope, that doesn't work. You have to edit a template file. Okay, well, I'll do that. Well, now you have to learn docutils or something like that. You know, it's just, it becomes this big, big project. And at that point, the simplicity of the format basically falls apart for me. And I think, well, there's no point to it anymore. Now I might as well use something that is highly structured, and I'll just keep using that because there's no advantage to this other thing yet. So my default is DocBook, obviously, but it might not be your default. Should it be your default? Well, yes, it should. So as I think I might have mentioned briefly in the previous episode, or I might not have, DocBook has a lot of what would be called semantic information. And that is to say that in HTML, for instance, or even, you know, like in Markdown, let's do Markdown, because I'm picking on Markdown. In Markdown, you might be typing something and you might think, okay, well, there's this thing here, there's this variable name, an environment variable specifically, and I want to somehow separate that from the rest of the text. And that's a pretty natural thing for us to try to do, for one reason or another. Sometimes we want to do it just because we feel, ooh, this is a super important term, I want to make it blink. And other times we think, well, it really is confusing. If this thing is not highlighted in some way, people will not understand where the environment variable begins and where the rest of my text ends, or the environment variable ends and where the rest of my text begins. So you might want to delimit that some way, separate that some way from the rest of the document. So you might go in there and give it 2 asterisks to make it bold, or you might go in there and give it 2 backticks to make it a code sort of thing. And that's fine, and that kind of works, and it produces on the, you know, once you render that through your processor, it makes that environment variable name bold or monotype or whatever it does, monospace, whatever. And that's great. And that's down to, you know, styling and stuff like that. But But you've got, and even in the source code, you do have some indication, hey, this word is special. It's either got asterisks around it, or it's got backticks around it, or three quotes, I think, is what it is in restructured text, three single quotes. Or maybe it's two backticks, and I don't know. But it does have something there. But in DocBook, you could say, okay, I want this environment variable to be separate from the rest of the text, and give it an invar tag, envar tag. Now you know exactly what that environment variable is, not just by looking and seeing, oh yeah, it's got some asterisks around it. You know that it's an environment variable because it is tagged as such. The same goes for a lot of different things. Key combinations like Control C, Control X, Control Z, Control X. I said that already. Anything like that, you can tag that stuff in DocBook as a keyboard combination, a key combo, and then you can tell exactly what that is. Is it a, what kind of key is it? Is it the thing that is literally printed on the key, or is it some other kind of key? You know, you can get really, really specific with the data that is contained in your document. And there are two great reasons. Three great reasons for that. One is consistency. Consistency in documentation, especially technical documentation, but also other kinds of documentation, it's really, really important. People want to see things. When you read something and it's consistently laid out or processed or rendered or whatever, that makes you think that there's some form of professionalism in that document. You know, they've actually taken the time to make sure that when they said Control C, yes, you know, on the page that I've just turned, the previous page, it was, you know, it looked like this. And now when I turn the page and Control C is there again, it still looks like that. Every time I see Control C, it's exactly like that. Or every time I see an environment variable, it is styled the same way. So there's a virtue there to making sure that you're using the same tag for the same kinds of elements. And sure, you could do that in Markdown as well or whatever, but with DocBook, you're doing it because of the tag itself, rather than just remembering, okay, every time I use a keyboard one, I'll do two asterisks. Every time I do any kind of variable name, I'll do the two backticks, and that's how it will be. Now, with DocBook, you've got specific tag types around specific terminology or specific words or letters or whatever. And then in your styling, you can do whatever you want to with that, and it won't matter because it's got a tag especially for it. And we're really bad about that with HTML. You know, we very frequently I see source code in HTML that just abuses tags. You know, they don't really know. Maybe there's not a tag for something, but they want to. So they just repurpose tags, you know. Well, nobody uses the EEM tag in my business, so I'll repurpose it in my CSS, and anything that is the EEM tag we won't italicize it. We'll just use it to do such and such instead. And, you know, I've seen that all over the place. So DocBook avoids that kind of thing because it's got a tag for so many different things, and that's great. And heck, I mean, it's XML, so you can actually add your own tags. I mean, DocBook frowns upon that because they say if you modify DocBook, you're not using DocBook. But I mean, you could bring in your own namespace and have your own tags. So that's a possibility. And that kind of speaks to the next benefit of all of this, which is the semantic meaning of data. You know, the actual fact, the fact that the actual term itself is of a certain kind. So maybe it's a product name, or maybe it's a vendor name, or something like that. It becomes meaningful now because it is tagged in a certain way. And so now you're not searching just by, well, what did we do to our product names? Did we make them emphasis? Yeah, I think so. Okay, well, let's look for all the emphasis tags. And then within those emphasis tags, we'll look for all the product, all the business names or whatever we're looking for. This time, you actually know what you're looking for because it is tagged in a certain way. And here's a true story from New Zealand that's quite funny, but it's I swear it is a true story. There was a company called Telecom or something like that. Telecom, yeah. And they got bought by a company called Spark. So for about 3 days on the internet, all of their public documentation, their website and everything, everywhere, every time the word telecommunication appeared, instead of saying telecommunication, it said spark communication. I mean, you can see exactly what some code monkey did. They did a find and replace on the business name, Telecom, or Telecom, and completely didn't think of the fact that Telecom was a very, very common prefix in their industry for the word from which it comes, telecommunications. And so when they did a find and replace blindly on every document in their business, they turned every instance of the actual word telecommunication into Spark communication. And it was hilarious and embarrassing, and you could just completely see people just, it was just a face palm moment, you know? It was just like, yeah, I see what you did there, and I think you should have maybe thought about that first. And I can only imagine, like, when someone found out what they had done, it must have been just really hoping that nobody noticed. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that can happen when you have no idea what the content of your document is. So with DocBook, you can actually tell, you know, you can identify what the content is rather than just having random words in it. And maybe that's important to you, maybe it's not. But that's the third thing, which is, I don't know, I think of it as future-proofing, but I guess technically it's not really. But in a way, it's opening yourself up for future uses of data that you might not actually consider yet. So, for instance, 5 years ago, maybe? Or not, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, there was no real concept of the idea that in a web page, you might have a phone number, and you might want to make that phone number clickable. Because why would that be something? Like, why would you need to click a phone number? A phone number you use on your phone. You don't use it on the web. And then suddenly, smartphones started coming out, and people started actually interacting with the web on their smartphones, and it became almost a problem that no one could identify where a phone number was versus a date or a zip code, postcode, whatever. And they thought, oh man, wouldn't it be neat if we had a tag for this? And of course, such a tag has since come about, and now we can tag things as a telephone number. You can click it, and it goes to your cell phone telephone app, and you can dial it without actually, you know, pressing the buttons. You just clicked on a number. But if we think of that really broadly, outside of that specific example, I mean, the same can be true for documentation that you're writing right now. There may be concepts in there that you'll never think, you know, why would I possibly need to do this with all of these words? They're just words. But, I mean, at some point you might find that some of that data becomes important if identified. And with something as explicit and verbose as DocBook is, you're kind of doing that inherently. You know, you're actually classifying the data that you're typing into your document rather than just typing data into the document and just saying, the reader can just figure out the context of all, or the type of all of this type. And, I mean, they can, and that's great, but that's a human. That's the human reading the words. What about the computer that's going to read the words at some point? And that's why DocBook, to me, is really a clever system. So why am I even talking about DocBook or Markdown or Restructured Text or AsciiDoc at all? And that is an important question, because a lot of people are just thinking, well, I don't even want to get involved. I'm just going to write in plain text, or I'm going to write in a word processor. So first of all, word processors today are writing in XML. You don't know it. You don't want to think about it, but it is. That's what's happening underneath the underneath all that fancy GUI stuff that you're looking at. It's most of the word processors are, yeah, generating XML. And you can look inside, certainly, of an ODT. It's just a zip file. You can unzip it and look right at it. It's a bunch of XML. You can look inside of an EPUB, and certainly that's got a bunch of HTML in it. I think a little bit of XML for that index part. And then you can, I think DocX is famously XML as well, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I could be wrong. I haven't really dealt with DocX in any recent time, but I'm pretty sure that's what the X actually stands for, is XML. So XML is here to stay, man. But I mean, really, it's something that we're all using secretly anyway. But aside from that technicality, the important thing here, actually, whether you're using DocBook or Markdown or Restructured Text or ASCII Docs, is structure and predictability. A long time ago, I was trying to get rid of all my physical books because they were heavy and I was tired of carrying them around. So I wanted them all really on my computer because I didn't have an e-reader at that time. So I thought, if I just get these books into some format that I can have them on my computer, they'll be easier to carry around. And at the time, this was a very long time ago, that was really hard to do because the publishing industry hadn't really jumped on board the whole concept of let's do this digitally yet. In fact, it's pretty arguable that they still have yet to figure that out. Luckily, it doesn't really matter because there are enough independent publishers at this point to really make that almost a moot point for what I'm interested in. But at the time, I thought, okay, well, I'll take pictures of them on a digital camera and then I'll load them in, and that's what I'll do. And yeah, I had a digital camera even that long ago because I was in film school at the time, so it kind of worked out. So I thought, well, that's what I'll do. That'll be great. I'll make my own little PDFs, and I actually did that almost to a whole book. And the resulting PDF file was something like 200 megabytes or something insane like that, because they were all like PNGs. So I made them all JPEGs, and I spent like a week trying to figure out how to process, 200 images, because I wasn't doing Linux yet, so I had no idea how to do that. Finally, sort of figured it out. Anyway, long story short, it was not working well for me. Eventually, I found that some people were doing that, like on Gutenberg. Like you could find lots of books on Gutenberg, and they were in HTML and I think T well I don't think I know TXT and HTML formats at that time. I don't think there was any kind of ebook format really. I mean, there may have been something, but certainly nothing I was familiar with. And so I've read a lot of books from Gutenberg, so and that was just plain text. But one thing I started to notice about plain text was that it wasn't predictable. So once I got savvy on Linux and figured out, oh, I could script stuff, cool. So I went to go take some of my plain text books and process them into some other format, like HTML, let's say. I don't actually remember, but let's say it was HTML. And I was finding that, in one file, the chapter headings would be chapter one, foo. And then in the next file, it would just be one dot space foo. And then in the next file, there would be no chapter numbers at all. It would just be foo, and then maybe in the next file it would be chapter one, carriage return, foo. So there was no predictability about what I was going to see in one text file to the next. And that meant that there was no way to script some kind of process to say, hey, when you see the word chapter, make that whole line an H1 element or whatever. And then when you see, I don't know, something else, do something else with it. You could not do that. It was not scriptable because no file was the same. So when I found out about, well, certainly DocBook, but even later when I found out about Markdown and stuff, and kind of realized that it was imposing a kind of an agreement on how we were going to format things, then I realized the true power of structure, of giving your data some kind of predictable, scriptable structure where we can say, yes, we know exactly what we're going to expect in this data file because we've been told it is a book. So we know that there will be headings and we know that there will be sections and we will know that there will be URLs at some points and maybe places to drop in images by our processor. All that kind of thing. All of that stuff becomes very, very predictable and you can reproduce the same set of processes across several different files. That's the power of structure, and it's why you should be using Markdown, Restructured Text, ASCII Doc, and frankly, probably DocBook. That's all from me about DocBook, folks. Thanks for listening. I hope you found it interesting, and you should try DocBook out. It's really quite cool. It's a lot of fun, and once you start getting into styling it with XSL, it's just super satisfying. And you know what? Best part about it? It'll keep you out of those word processors. And that's what I really care about. Talk to you next time.
You've You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.